Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Titans playing some Thursday night football tonight. And to help us talk more about that and all things NFL, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How you doing?
What's going on, fellas?
Not a whole lot. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, Will Levis, excellent on Sunday against the Falcons. He throws for four touchdowns in his debut. We'll see how he responds tonight in his second start against Pittsburgh. But what did Levis's performance on Sunday show you about what he could be maybe in this league? I know it's one game, but what did you think of what you saw from him on Sunday against the Falcons?
Well, like you said, it's one game. I hope that everyone has the grace to know that it's not all going to look like that, and there are going to be rough games, and there's going to be struggles, and that people don't freak out and hit the panic button. So don't expect the start to be to be indicative of, you know, where this is going to go the remainder of the season. But, you know, be encouraged and know that there's struggles that are going to come. And I thought that, to me, if you just looked at, first off, if Treylon Burks catches a couple passes, I think when you get away from the four touchdown passes, the yards per attempt, not super impressive. But if Burks catches two balls, we're talking about maybe a different scenario there. And it's an even better day. I thought that the four touchdown passes were interesting when you looked back at them. I thought two were really good, the Westbrook-Akina pass and the deep ball to DeAndre Hopkins, in which he doesn't commit OPI. Let's be honest, the first one was OPI.
It was.
Ball hung up a little bit. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. And the second, you know, the D-hop catch and run was exquisite. You know, ball was probably a little behind him. But, again, for a rookie starting, what the scenario was, I think that Levis acquitted himself nicely. And again, that last touchdown pass, and I tweeted this, I thought, I think there are only a couple guys in the NFL, and I don't want to overhype Levis, but I think there are only a couple guys in the NFL that can throw a ball across their body like that, diagonally, hit a guy perfectly without having his feet fully set in a situation like that. I mean, that's probably like Mahomes and Allen type arm strength, which is why you draft this guy. He's got size, he's got tools, he's got arm strength. And very, very encouraging start. But I think if you also want to look at downside, remember, it's an Atlanta team that was in the bottom third in the league in terms of pass rush pressure. I think they pressured him on around 40% of his passes, which is high for them, which is, you know, probably a little bit indicative of where that line is at, some of the things he was doing to get guys open, although I thought the pocket actually held up really well for him in that game. And then, you know, Grady Jarrett goes down. I think there's, against the Steelers, especially with Cam Hayward coming back, you know, Highsmith and Watt, you're looking at a situation where he's probably going to face, even though I don't think they've been great, a great pressure team the way that maybe we're used to in the past, I think he's going to face it. There's going to be some teeth he's going to be running into tonight. So all in all, I think pretty impressive. But a lot of growth left ahead of him, and we haven't seen, I think, yet, especially in that first game, the things that we get nervous about with Levis. When he's under pressure, he's got to make decisions and not over-rely on his arm, throwing things into coverage, getting himself in trouble, not throwing the ball away, figuring out how to not take sacks, you know, just typical rookie stuff. Honestly, it's, we're not just harping on something with him where all other rookies, it's not the same thing, especially guys with strong arms. You're like, please God, figure out that you can throw the ball away and don't risk turnovers and do these things that are going to have Mike Vrabel pulling his hair out. That's what everyone's just going to have to buckle up and be okay with some of those things happening and working that out. So I'm happy for Titans fans. It's a little bit of a booster shot for everybody. It was cool to see how excited clearly the players were. It was cool to see DeAndre Hopkins get unlocked in that moment. And hopefully everybody doesn't go overboard about, you know, how is Mike treating Will? And what about this interaction in the tunnel? I saw the video of the interaction, and
he clearly hates him.
Yeah. Well, and I'm telling you, I'm gonna go ahead and tread lightly there, because we had a video, a social video early in the year. We're like, well, does Mike Vrabel hate Will Levis?
That's right.
You know, that, you remember that? Yeah, that didn't go well. Like, that was something where we had to have a little talk with our social team.
Yeah, you seemed to really enjoy that. And that was you, right? You came up with that? Wasn't that you?
I had a lot of fun with that one. That was really
a great idea by you.
Awesome day with the social team, being like, yeah, okay, so let's have a conversation about you putting words into other people's mouths. Real quick, too, before we get into what I'm sure we're going to get into, I do, and I think fans should understand this, I think it's good for Vrabel to be the type of coach that's coaching Will Levis, because you know what? Will Levis, and be completely honest about it, a lot of teams, when they did their assessment on him, if there was something about Will Levis that maybe gave them kind of a sideways vibe about him, he was extremely confident. He was a guy who they felt like really liked his game, really liked kind of being that guy. And a lot of quarterbacks are like that, and that's fine. But, like, you know, that whole eat the cheese thing, you would hear teams say, like, he's a guy who will eat that cheese. And it's good to have a coach who's like, you know what, man, I'm going to keep bringing you down to earth. I'm going to keep reminding you that you got to work really hard. I'm going to keep reminding you, keep yourself composed. Don't talk into every microphone that's put in your face. You know, don't wave into every camera. Like, you know, just keep your mind on the game and refining yourself. And I don't think that's the worst thing for Will Levis. And I know that people want to see Mike, you know, embracing him and hugging him and giving all. I think a little, you know, tough love's okay, particularly at the start here, and earn it. Like, believe me, Ryan Tannehill had to earn it. There's no doubt. And at Tannehill's height, Mike gave him respect, but it didn't just wasn't forked over like nothing. And if Tannehill was telling you the truth, even at the heights, there was always an element of, you know, having to continually earn Mike Vrabel's respect. That's just how he is as a coach. And I actually kind of think it's good for what Will Levis's makeup is. It's I'm glad it wasn't an overjoyed, you know, high five, awesome, great, this is how it's going to be type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's what his family thinks the same thing. I mean, Vrabel doing that anyway is like, basically you have to be near death center who shouldn't even be on the field, and then he'll hug you and cry, but, you know, like with Ben Jones last year. But other than that, that's how he is. I mean, that's...
And Joe, he treats everybody like that. That's the thing. Like, I'll say this about Mike Vrabel as someone who doesn't have, like, a relationship with Mike at all, like the way maybe other people out there do at all, okay? The book on Mike, everybody, and I'm talking about people inside the NFL, I'm talking about people who cover him, all these things. Like, Mike is a you-got-to-earn-it guy, and he doesn't let a lot of people in, and he's very, like, it's just, you got to earn it with him. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, I think that, especially when you're a head coach, it can be a very, very good thing. Like, they're going to face the Pittsburgh Steelers tonight, and I will tell you right now, everybody thinks Mike Tomlin's this, you know, the coolest guy, and he connects with all his players and stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, when Mike got that job in Pittsburgh, I remember being there, and all these players, he instantaneously, they were like, yo, like, I connect with this guy, but oh my God, we got to do this fitness test at the beginning of the year. And there were like potential Hall of Famers. We're like dying. And I don't want to say dying, that's terrible. Who are gassed out in a fitness test thinking, well, I'm going to be able to get through this because Mike's my guy. No. Like, Mike was like, I'm here for you. I'm your coach. Like, great. I'm going to back you. I'll be your guy. But you're going to earn it every second you're on this roster with me. And if you respect Mike Tomlin for that, you should respect Mike Vrabel for that, because they're very similar in that respect.
All right. So, speaking of Will Levis, you go on some lame podcast and you know, and talk about, like, the Levis draft pick being quote. Wait, who was? Oh, yeah. Okay, it was Michael Smith. All right, he's good. That's a good podcast.
Let's drag him into this.
Yeah, I know. Let's attack Michael Smith. All right, I didn't know what podcast it was, but regardless, the term was ownership-driven decision, I believe, and I'd like you to explain that and also explain what to the Robbie and Rex Show listeners why you did not tell us this.
You're already putting ownership-inspired.
Oh, not driven. Inspired. Okay. All right.
Difference.
Okay. What can you tell us about
that?
All right. What can you tell us?
All right, so it's funny because when you say things like this, everyone's like, ownership selected Levis. That's how it happens. Like, you know, it's always one person. That's my favorite thing, where anytime a draft pick happens, it's like, you know, absolutely the GM made it, or absolutely the owner made it, or absolutely the head coach made it, when often there is a consortium of opinions, and they're not always like, hey, 100%, hey, this is exactly what we got to do, you know. And one of the things I will say about Mike Vrabel and a lot of head coaches is that they want to have as many, particularly on a team that needs it, you know, you want to have as many assets across the board as possible. So if you're, you know, trading multiple picks to go up and get a player, particularly when it's a quarterback who's not instantaneously going to start, who, you know, like, hey, our best chance to win right now is going to be Ryan Tannehill. And, oh, by the way, we just traded, or we just drafted a third round quarterback the year before. You know, it's a situation where I think that you had ownership knew that the thought process, and I think probably, you know, in personnel was, say, long term, we might not have the quarterback on the roster yet. There's value if Levis gets to a certain point on the board that's got to be considered. And yeah, I think ownership was definitely on board with that. Now, I said on the podcast, and I will maintain this, I think there were certainly differing, I want to say different, not differing, different opinions about, you know, Will Levis, like there were in all teams, by the way. Everybody doesn't agree on, hey, is this the absolute right guy in terms of the makeup? Are we all happy with his level of cockiness? Are we all happy with, you know, the decisions we saw on tape? You know, his most recent tape coming into the league, that kind of thing. So if you ask me, was this a Mike pick? I would say no. And you know what? That's fine. Mike Vrabel wants to come out and say, yeah, it's BS. This guy's when he's talking about it. Absolutely was my pick. Cool. Do that. That's fine. I'm fine with that. I don't agree. I think it was a pick that it was something that was reached, a decision that was reached. I think that, like I said, I think ownership was inspired by the idea we need to address quarterback again, and here's a guy who's got tools and value. And yeah, I'm on board with that. And I brought this up, I think, on the show after the draft. Probably people didn't pay a lot of attention to it. I know, I'm sure I mentioned it on our podcast, maybe other shows or whatever. People who knew Mike, it didn't go unnoticed in the video where, you know, everybody's seen it, where, you know, the phone rans, Rand Carthon's congratulating him. The phone goes to Amy and, you know, she's all happy and congratulating him. And then it gets to Mike, and Mike immediately gets down to business about, here's what you got to do. Here's what you need to be prepared for. You know, here's what, like, instantly you could see sort of two welcome parties in one. Okay, buddy, get to work. Like, this is, you better be ready for this. We just invested assets in you. We're not playing around. Like, you know, and this is what my function is going to be in your life. So, you know, people should understand that. I will also say, people get way too caught up in who made the pick, right? Like they do. And when I said it on the podcast, I do think it's fascinating. I like to know the backstory on it. Down the line, you tend to hear a little more truth about how exactly it came down, what the conversations were, things like that, especially if it's a really successful player. But years and years on Brady, how did that pick happen? You know, who really backed him? All these different things. Dak, it was a big conversation in Dallas. Different people in that organization wanted a different quarterback in the fourth round when they ended up with Dak, including ownership. So
Connor Cook, right? Wasn't Connor Cook possibly? Just a total aside there. Weren't they all over him?
They had two quarterbacks that really they wanted ahead of Dak. Paxton Lynch in the first round. Jerry was all, you know, fired up to get Paxton Lynch. Didn't happen. Ended up getting Denver ended up taking him. And then, yeah, as you said, Connor Cook, that was, and the Raiders moved up to get Connor Cook in front of them. And it was funny because later the draft board leaked and they were like, off the top of my head here, I mean, there were a lot of quarterbacks ahead of Dak on their board, including, but there was one on the board who was ahead of Dak when they took Dak instead. So then you're like, well, how did that happen? There was someone higher on the board, clearly someone championed for him. Which is where it becomes, I think, interesting. Who wasn't in the room and stood on the table to make Dak the pick at that point? So that, to me, is interesting. But again, I don't want people to get caught up in, like, well, if it wasn't just Mike's pick, if maybe Mike, you know, would have leaned into adding more, you know, players on the roster, not, you know, combining these assets to go up and get a quarterback when he knew they'd be starting a veteran this year. does that mean Mike doesn't like? No, no. And by the way, I think another thing about Mike Vrabel, too, is he is the ultimate, in some respects, and I think I've told you this in the past, Joe, I think he's the ultimate rally guy as a head coach. Like, once the decision's made by the organization, jointly, whatever, he's like, all right, let's go do it. Like, let's do it. Let's put in the work. Let's make it happen. He's not out there. He's not going to be a guy who's out there, like, constantly undercutting it and being, like, trying to figure out ways to be like, this is going to fail and it's that person's fault. And I, trust me, I've seen coaches and general managers like that, and I don't think he falls in that category. So I think people just need to calm down a little bit and enjoy the ride, okay? You picked a guy who clearly has a lot that he's bringing to the table, which is a pretty awesome situation for the organization.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We continue our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what a week it's been for the Raiders. You have the Devontae Adams situation on Sunday where he can't get the football thrown his way, and when it is thrown his way, it's not thrown accurately his way. In the middle of the night the other night, they move on from the coach and GM, and now Jimmy G to the bench. What do you make of what this week has been like for the Raiders and where things go from here?
Certainly been interesting. There's no question. Just wait. I mean, we're just cranking up the Jim Harbaugh stuff. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I went through there in training camp, and one of the things that I thought, and I do think this played out too in the firings, it was clear to me when you talk to people in the organization, when Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler went in there, that Mark Davis had it in his mind, hey, we were in the playoffs, like, I want to continue this momentum. I don't see this as a teardown rebuild. I know you want to bring in your culture and make some changes, but I want to compete. And so Chandler Jones is added. Devontae Adams is added to the fold. You had Darren Waller extension, all these things that ended up being, they did not work out. Darren Waller eventually gets dealt. Devontae Adams is obviously not happy. Chandler Jones, very, very public and messy. Mental health, thing that plays out on social media, really rough. And then on top of that, they're a bad team in year one. And I think it became apparent to Mark Davis after that, largely when Josh McDaniels, comes to Mark Davis and says, I don't think Derek Carr's the guy. I think we got to make a change at quarterback. I think Jimmy Garoppolo, I think there were other quarterbacks in play as well, but it was clear that eventually he was leaning into Jimmy Garoppolo. I think at that point, Mark Davis is sitting there going, okay, this does feel like a Patriots culture install. It does feel like there's a little bit of a rebuild happening here, even though we're not saying it. We're sending a guy out of town in Derek Carr, who I do have a connection with and who has stood up here in tough times. And I'm going to be measuring. This better go right in year two. Like, there's going to be expectations, particularly where it concerns guys I've spent a lot of money on, like Devontae Adams, and I don't want to be embarrassed here. And the thing was, he got embarrassed. And I think, some of the things that happened with Mark Davis that bothered him, the Las Vegas Aces, who he owns, go out and they win a title. He feels like, hey, we've got a good head coach. All these things are going right. You can see the organization knows what it's doing. And then I go out in public, particularly at these events after they win a title, and all I have is people yelling at me, screaming at me about, like, fire Josh McDaniels. And it's like embarrassing for him to be out in public knowing, like, I poured all this into the football side of my, holdings, and all I'm getting jeered outside. And I don't think he was happy about that. And I think as he saw players grumbling publicly, and I think he could see there was some disconnect going on inside the locker room. He talked to players about this. He kept his ears open. He had a dialogue with these guys, and he started to hear things that were similar to Josh McDaniel's stay in Denver, which was, we're not connecting with this guy. We don't know what the mission is here. We don't know that he's necessarily the guy. And it wasn't just people like, well, it's got to be coming from Josh Jacobs, the running back, or has to be coming from Devontae Adams. No, I think it was coming from a lot of defensive guys too. And, I think he got to the point, particularly after the Monday night loss to Detroit, which was embarrassing again, and frustrating, especially the way, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo played, where that was it. He'd had it. He knew that I think he felt that Josh had lost the locker room and it was time to move on from this. And I do think Antonio Pierce being the guy who ends up being the interim, who, by the way, is not a coordinator. He's a position coach. And I think that he knew when he talked to people in the locker room, like, hey, we connect with this guy. We think he's real with us. We think, which is not uncommon with position coaches in particular, they very much connect with players in the locker room. And, you know, the defensive players there, there's a lot of core guys that are very much the leaders of that team. So it's not a surprise to me that the interim becomes Antonio Pierce. But I think this all, it's a lot of different things that stacked on top of each other, quarterback, Mark Davis's expectations, some of the embarrassment he felt, and all these different things. And, you know, he pulls the plug, and now we're going to swing into, well, did he do this because he thinks Harbaugh might be available? How's he going to, you know, conduct the next search? All these different things. It's a messed up situation there. And it is, it's not a roster bereft of talent. They do have some talent, but you got to believe that whoever comes in next, you could be looking at quite a turnover there. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's, I guess it all depends on who the head coach and general manager are coming in, but it's about as messed up a situation as it possibly could be. And I will say this about Mark Davis. Since he took over the team after his dad passed away, Al Davis, in, what, 2011, I think the only thing that guy's really done right is get the team to Vegas. But that was it. The best thing he's done is put money in his own pocket through the move. Other than that, he's right there with every other bad owner in the league.
Although, I mean, I think firing Josh McDaniels by a fortune cookie was kind of a stroke of genius. So, I mean, I'll give him credit for that one.
Hey, real quick, I'll give you a quick story about Mark Davis. I'm at the Biltmore in Arizona years ago. We're at an owner's meeting, and I'm at it's in the Biltmore, right? Super swanky hotel. There's a sushi place, and I'm sitting at the sushi bar by myself. Mark Davis comes in, sidles up, sits next to me at the sushi bar. I swear to God, I watched the guy eat three bowls of edamame, and that was it.
Really like some edamame, God, baby. Like, get out of here.
Yeah, I was like, is this a rabbit? I'm like, dude, like he's a protein beyond the edamame, buddy.
Wow. I did not have that on my bingo card today. Well, you, Charles, real quick, you mentioned a name, and we've talked about him in a different, you know, just the whole insane Connor Stallion story. But what about Harbaugh and his viability in the NFL right now? Because I do feel like maybe he'll be looking that way.
Well, here's the fun thing about this, and I wrote a piece. I don't know if it's even up today, but I wrote a piece late last night about this. Everybody forgot that when the investigation in Ohio State happened, back in, I want to say like 2011, 2012, right around then.
You know it well.
And all this, yeah, right. We're in the middle of that. And players got fragged for the tattoo stuff and all this. And then Terrell Pryor basically renders himself ineligible and gets himself in the supplemental draft by saying, here's all the stuff that happened at Ohio State. And so the NCAA decides, you know, hey, we're going to suspend Jim Tressel for all these games. And Tressel, in the middle of it, he resigned, right? So he gets to the NFL, and the Colts hire him as a replay advisor. So he's going to be a replay advisor for the Indianapolis Colts. All of a sudden, the Colts step out, and this is when, like, publicly everyone's like, why are all these Ohio State players, why do they have to serve out these suspensions and everything? Why are they being held responsible? And meanwhile, Tressel can just resign and go off to the NFL for, you know, his next job, you know, whatever. So the Colts step out, and I think it was under pressure from the league office. That was how it was insinuated at the time. And they go, yeah, he's not going to start that role for us until week 7. So it was essentially a suspension. Like, they held up his ability to work in the NFL for 6 games, which mirrored what some of these suspensions that, you know, players were serving. And then Terrell Pryor was dealing with on the NFL level. I think he was suspended for 5 games because of what had happened at Ohio State. And so it created this idea. And then Roger Goodell came out and said, I'm glad, like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he was like, I'm glad they did that. If they hadn't held Jim Tressel accountable, I would have held him accountable. So it created an idea that there's this precedent that if the NCAA goes after a coach and a program and everyone, so let's say the NCAA comes out and says, you know what, Jim Harbaugh, we found X, Y, and Z, we're going to suspend you for a year. Now it's like, okay, well, say he goes to the NFL and the Raiders were to hire him, is he subject to an NFL suspension? Is the NFL going to uphold, basically, quote unquote, to use Goodell's words over 10 years ago, hold them accountable? Like, and I think the Raiders or any team that would even consider Jim Harbaugh would have to know that. Like, they're going to have to ask, like, hey, wait a minute. Nothing's going to happen to Michigan anytime soon, by the way. People should understand that. Even if, like, if the NCAA found something on Michigan and they say, here's the infractions we think happened, Michigan's got 90 days to respond to that, okay? Which, by the way, okay, so they're playing out the season. They're going to be in the, if they qualify for it, they're going to be in the college football playoffs. This season's going to be done. It's going to be in the books. It's going to be a long time before any of this gets sorted out. And then after that, they go through the infractions process. That can take forever. It can take years. And so it's possible that, let's say Harbaugh decides I'm going to go to the NFL. Let's say the Raiders are interested, and they've been rumored to be interested in 2014, 2022. So it's possible that it's there again. Let's say we're a year into his tenure, or 2 years into his tenure, or whatever, and it all comes down the pipeline, and next thing you know, the NCAA, what the final ruling is, yeah, Jim Harbaugh would have been suspended for X amount of time here. Does that mean the league is then going to turn to the Raiders or whoever and say, hey, so you're gonna have to uphold that? Like, what? Like, it's weird to me, because I'm like, back when it was done to Tressel, there was a lot of optics that played into it, because it's like, why are the adults who are responsible in this situation getting away with something or able to skate when, and there was a lot of Pete Carroll in this, because Pete Carroll had gone to Seattle in the middle of the whole Reggie Bush USC stuff. It was like, why are we letting this happen? And the NFL, and it was felt like from an optics standpoint, was stepping in and basically trying to go, hey, we'll hold the adults responsible. Which seems ludicrous now, because you're talking about, why would the NFL uphold college, NCAA to college? That's not, there's nothing in the NFL world that suggests that this corporation should uphold this other basically corporation's rules. Like, I know I get the optics thing, but it seems kind of crazy, and it's something that definitely could come into play. But you know what? 2 weeks from now, Jim Harbaugh could sign an extension at Michigan. This could all be off the books anyway, and none of it matters. But it's certainly going to be for good theater. And all these people out there that are wondering what's going to happen to Michigan, I can tell you this right now, having dealt with a lot of the NCAA's infraction processes for a lot of years, they are playing out the season. And they're going to play in the college football playoff if they make it there. And nothing is happening anytime soon in terms of this investigation, other than everything that's happened with leaks and here's what they're finding and this guy's showing up on this sideline. It's I do like the Where's Waldo-esque like, where are we gonna find this guy in the next photo? Like, what? He's gonna be, at some point he's gonna be in like a White House staff photo,
yeah,
making video.
It's pretty wild.
It is amazing.
Charles Robinson joins us every Thursday morning from 8 to 8:30 here on the show. Charles, appreciate you as always, my man, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Take care, guys.
All right, man. Charles Robinson, every Thursday at 8 o'clock. Lots to get to from what Charles said there. We'll get into the Will Levis part of the conversation coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.